Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge. Today on the podcast, we welcome guest Katie Mora. Katie is an Institute for Functional Medicine certified practitioner and a registered dietitian who specializes in gut health and nutrition. She owns and runs a virtual functional medicine practice, Gut Honest Truth. In private practice, Katie treats a wide variety of conditions, always focusing on the root causes of inflammation, autoimmune disease, irritable bowel syndrome, food sensitivities, allergies, skin conditions, fatigue, amongst many other chronic disease states and symptoms. Katie is the host of the Gut Honest Truth podcast, and she has interviewed some of the most prominent individuals in the field. She has also been featured in publications such as Mind Body Green, Experience Life Magazine, Vitamin Shop, and more. She's also the author of 5 condition-specific ebooks that are available on her website, guthonesttruth.com. We are stoked to have Katie on the podcast. We are honestly probably going to have her on again because we just had so many questions for her. So please enjoy this episode with Katie.
Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we have Katie Mora, and we are so excited to have you on our show.
Thank you. I'm super pumped to be here.
Yeah. So I kind of found you through Instagram, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and we'll go from there.
Sure. So for anybody that is new to me, I am both a registered dietitian as well as a certified functional medicine practitioner. So anybody who's new to functional medicine as a whole, it's really just more so root cause medicine. So really like diving deeper into individual cases and like connecting the siloed issues within a body and kind of putting it all together for someone. So that is what I do. I do specialize in gut health. So specifically a lot of IBS, SIBO, parasites, food sensitivities, that whole shebang. But I do see everything from like, you know, heavy metal detoxification to autoimmunity and kind of the whole, run the whole gamut, if you will. So I have a private practice. It is virtual and it is right out, I practice right outside of Washington, DC. And I also produce a lot of content. So I have, you guys probably know I have my own podcast and some ebooks and different things I put out there, but that's sort of a little about me professionally.
I have a question about the virtual practice. Yeah. So obviously you have your license as a dietitian and then as a nutritional therapy, you said nutritional therapy practitioner?
No, I actually don't really know what they do, but no, I'm a licensed nutritionist and dietitian. I'm a certified functional medicine practitioner. So,
okay, got it.
Sort of different.
So can you work with people wherever?
So when you do consulting more so, yes. Like, so I have patients all over. If you were to work, especially under, if you were like insurance, which I don't do, you would need to see the person individualized in the states you're licensed. I'm licensed in multiple states kind of around the country. Kind of we're talking before, I'm in New York, I'm in DC, I'm in Maryland, Virginia, locally you don't need a license. So sort of depends on the situation.
Got it. Cool. That's so awesome. It's so cool how like things are just kind of morphing into being more accessible, you know, just more virtual stuff. So that's awesome.
It is going to be a silver lining, I hope, of this unfortunate pandemic that people can kind of see who they need to see and get the appropriate help, improving that. You know, telehealth has really been effective for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Even with what we do, we are able to use telehealth and it's kind of...
It's pretty awesome.
It's crazy to think about where we're at now, but anyway. So let's kind of go into it. Your Instagram, so I found you through Instagram and your page is unbelievable with the amount of education you're providing to people. So for people, we're going to link everything in this, of course, but... Some of the topics you cover are just, I mean, you're talking about SIBO on your last post and methane dominant versus hydrogen dominant, I mean, or hydrogen sulfide. It's just amazing. Kind of, how did you get into doing that? And that education, like, you're just spreading so much knowledge. I don't.
Thank you. So when I first started my Instagram, I was actually working full time for another practice and it was more of like a creative outlet for myself. And I've always really enjoyed education. Like I'm a big believer, even with my patients, like if you don't understand why or what I'm telling you to do, you're not, why would you do it? You know, especially term. So I really, really like to educate. And I really like to, I've always had interns and I've always educated other staff and like physicians and stuff. So I really like the educational component and taking really like high topic advanced ideas and making them kind of dumbed down into layman's terms so like the average individual can kind of really understand the impact of it. So I created it, and then it's sort of morphed into from like doing that into I wrote my first ebook, and then it just kind of kept going. And I sort of just wanted to make my page, I guess, there's a lot of people doing that, but a little bit different than people can't afford functional medicine, a lot of people right now. So I really kind of try to have a little bit of something for everyone. So if you can't afford to work with me, right, I have a lot, I do think a lot of information to give away for free on Instagram or my Facebook or my podcast and stuff. So it was really trying to reach like a big population and have people kind of find answers they probably aren't easily able to find or afford elsewhere.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. Functional medicine is very difficult. I think we have a really great following of people that listen to this podcast that actually understand the difference between conventional and not even just with gut health or just with like internal medicine, more with even orthopedic injuries.
Yeah.
And so there's something that really is important about finding the root cause to things.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I hope it keeps to catch on with individuals. Yeah. And
me too. And it's just, I feel like the future, if this pandemic has taught us anything, it's that like our health is so paramount, and just being, you know, proactive in whatever capacity that we have, because obviously people have all sorts of different resources and education backgrounds. But so I'm in PT school right now, actually. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I really liked that our program has touched on even thus far was like the role of nutrition. Like we actually have one of our faculty is a dietitian and a physical therapist, which is pretty cool. And like,
yeah, that's a cool combo.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if you're not, you know, nourishing your body or like looking at that aspect of your life, like how the hell do you expect to like heal from an injury?
Yeah.
You know? No. So I actually had a question for you, and it's totally off topic from what we were just talking about, but we have so many questions, so might as well get into it.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So what
can one of my favorite things to do is just sit here and answer questions. I can have a job just doing that. I would just
awesome. So what can your skin tell you about your gut health?
Oh my God, everything. So people, right? So many, I get a lot of patients that come or people that message me and they're like, I have XYZ. There's so many different conditions, and we can touch on some of them if you want, but they don't think you can help, right? If you say, a lot of people don't realize, like, just because you specialize in something doesn't mean you're not well-equipped and educated in all of the facets of health, if you will. But your skin is like a mirror of internal health, right? It's your largest detox organ. And what that really means is like anything going on within that needs to come out or wants to come out is going to come out through your skin. So you're going to see it poke its head in some way. So skin is interesting because it can be like one of the first things you really notice that I guess maybe we're all so vain that we notice and want to fix. So we're like out to seek the remedy there. But it's like, if you don't dive deeper, topical things aren't going to probably cut it, right? They're going to do it short term. But there's so many different issues from dandruff to a lot of people, right? They complain of the back of their arms having bumps, to acne. The acne depends where it is, to rosacea, to psoriasis. So like the list goes, urticaria and hives. It can all stem back to the gut. And that unfortunately can mean anything from like food issues to stressors in the gut, to infections, to having like a low stomach acid or digestive output so that you're not digesting food well. So like a good example would be rosacea, right? Like a lot of people have reddening in the face. And if you go to your probably traditional dermatologist or PCP, they're going to be like, I forget what it's called off the top of my head, the Dermatex, whatever it is that they put on. And it can work for people, right? And like the whole point of that is there's actually like a little like skin parasite that is pretty normal that can exist. And if it overgrows, whatever, it's killing it. But like rosacea can have huge connections to having low stomach acid, which our traditional healthcare world does not talk about and is very imbalanced in what's actually going on versus what we preach in the medical world, to having H. pylori, which is like a bacterial infection, which is found in over 50% of the population worldwide, to having small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Like, so if you don't find out right, you're not going to just naturally clear SIBO. You're not going to actually just naturally clear H. pylori in most cases. And if you have that, it could just be showing up like your only symptom could be rosacea, which is going to drive you nuts for the rest of your life. So.
What you're just talking about with like all this skin stuff. So how do you personally in your practice test for any of these gut/skin dysfunction? Like,
yeah,
it's really gut.
Yeah, so it depends what you're coming in for. So like if you came in with psoriasis, which is can be on your nails, your skin, wherever, that is autoimmune. So I would probably, there's a huge connection with SIBO with psoriasis, but I would probably run a SIBO breath test, which you could do this in the comfort of your own home, and a stool test and look at the whole, I'm a big believer of seeing the whole picture and not just like, unless you cannot afford it, I will pick what I, based on your symptoms, like feels the most appropriate starting place. But I would think about that and maybe some food sensitivities and starting, and you do not need to do a blood test and spend all your money to figure that component out. But if you came in with acne, right, depending where the acne is, I might think that's a hormonal component, which can also be connected to the gut, but a hormonal component. Or if it's like skin acne, you might just start thinking about like their gut microbiome as a whole and run a stool test or food or something like that. So it really kind of depends on what the skin condition is. But like if you are new to both being a practitioner and a patient, like a stool test is a good starting point if you want to test, if you will. That can rule, I think, in and out the most diverse amount of things at once. Well,
what are some of the different places that acne can manifest and like what it can mean? Like, is there actually like pretty regular patterns of indications?
There are. Sadly, acne can literally appear anywhere on the body, right? It could be like on your lip, it could be on your belly, it could be really anywhere. And everyone's different. So if it's like on the body, meaning like your torso or something like that, or your legs or your butt, I would usually start to think about your body products, right? Well, your hygiene and your body products, but also your food. So do you have like a food sensitivity? And that is where it's manifesting. So like, I know I have a lot of family members that they get a lot of skin issues when they eat wheat, right? Or if they eat too much and they kind of go too far, they might start getting acne like on the back of their neck or something like that. And then it goes away the second that they stop eating it. So that sort of depends. If you have facial acne, that can also be food, but you also really want to think about obviously your makeup care if you're wearing makeup, or like, is it on your chin, right? Is it like a testosterone issue or a detox issue of testosterone? Is it coming like around the temples or something more? You could actually think about food, or around the nose can actually be more like a yeast problem or a bacterial problem. So there are connections. It's not always black and white. In other words, that's why testing is so great, right? Because you can actually pinpoint it.
Yeah. I actually had for years, and it was after, so I've competed in bodybuilding, mm-hmm. not for a couple of years, but kind of after I got done. So obviously you get super lean and then you get not lean pretty quickly. So your hormones are all over the place.
Yeah.
And my digestion was always not like the greatest. Like I was like regular, but not like, it felt like I was kind of inefficient, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And once I like attacked that, like I always had acne like around my chin, and it would get worse, like, you know, around ovulation and like right before my period, but it was like pretty constant. And like sometimes it would just get really bad, and it was like super embarrassing. Obviously your skin is pretty, you know, it's out there, it's on your face. Mm-hmm. And I don't wear makeup really on my face unless it's like for an event. Mm-hmm. So once I figured out my digestion and got that more efficient, it like, it was crazy. It was pretty much like, I mean, within a month of just, you know, adding like a little bit more like soluble fiber and having my digestion improve, which like I thought I kind of knew what I was doing before, but it was like kind of a dumb moment where, I mean, you really can make such a huge difference. It's crazy. I actually had a question from prior when you were talking about H. pylori being present 50% of the population. So I've heard that before. And is that like new, or is that just, is that like because we sanitize everything, or is it just that we're more vulnerable now, or what is that deal with that?
So I think it's a little bit of everything. I think that the concept of it being present in 50% of the population is not new. I think it's being talked about more because there's more and more testing coming out in functional medicine, and that world of like integrative health is coming out to be bigger, and more people are realizing like how big of an impact the gut microbiome has on people. So I think it's like, right, the more you test something, kind of like SIBO too, people talk, like the more you test it, it's always been there, but people are like, oh, it's new and it's this crazy thing. And it's like, it's not, it's always been there. The difference is, so it, you, and this is like, I'm actually fat, like I'm total nerd about H. pylori. It's like my favorite thing to talk about. Yeah. I think it's the coolest thing. It is the wildest bacteria, but anyway, it's like people don't get it and they're like, oh, I have it and I have to kill it. Maybe, right? Maybe for you, but you can actually have H. pylori, just like most things, like parasites, and it be okay if your immune system and your body can deal with it and keep it within balance and everything. It's like kids on a playground playing fairly together, right? Like playing well, taking turns, all that stuff. When your immune system stinks, which is all of America, as you can see right now, right? Your immune system can't tolerate it, and it gets out of whack, it takes over, and in my opinion, in the gut, it's not like a movie. The good guys don't win, the bad guys win. So it's going to take over, it's going to cause and wreak havoc and cause like a slew of issues downstream. And you'll see in couples a lot, like someone has, they both have it and one is fine, but one is super symptomatic and struggling. But you got to treat both of them because they're going to keep passing it back and forth. So it's very
interesting.
Yeah, it can be passed through saliva. It's I'm telling you. So you're going to see me be a
nerd. That's
crazy. That's a cool bacteria.
How do you treat H. pylori? Because there's different ways you can do it naturally. And I had H. pylori, I had SIBO and parasites. Yeah, so
once you have one, you get it all. Especially
It's really
H. pylori, just the rest of it goes to crap.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, I was treated for all of that and 2020 was fun. And I'm just wondering how you specifically go after it. Because some people are super onto the idea of doing antibiotics, which is kind of interesting because that could backfire. Yep. So I don't know. Yeah. What's your take on it?
Okay. So I'm not going to give you my total secret sauce because that might be something that more comes with, but I do actually talk about this and give a lot of treatment in my eBooks too, for anyone who needs more guidance, but I actually see more effective treatment with herbals than I do with medication. So for anyone who doesn't know H. pylori, right, it's like this thing that's so common. The traditional Western medicine treatment is triple antibiotic therapy. That is going to do some damage. It can take 6 months to recover from one round of antibiotics, which is 2 weeks. So now we're doing three at a time. And so I do multiple different types of stool testing, but one I use a lot is Diagnostic Solutions GIMAP. Which isn't necessarily like, there's a million ways to test H. pylori, as I'm sure you're aware of. You can do it in breath, blood, stool, whatever. It detects it a lot, but it also will tell me, right, which antibiotics it's resistant to, which is common. You will see it. It's like resistant to all these things. So it's like we're giving people antibiotics that they're resistant to, and now you're just worsening everything. So it's not that it's wrong. So if you're a person who has gastritis, you've got an ulcer, right? You have a family history of stomach cancer. Yeah, I would probably jump on the antibiotic. They also test things like virulence factors, and virulence factors are kind of the scarier part of the H. pylori and how it colonizes. So like, yes, I think there's a time and a place for medication for sure. But I treat off of a research study that you can easily find on Google if you Google H. pylori natural treatment, and it got rid of 76% of cases in 2 weeks. Right?
Wow, that's impressive.
Naturally. So I have my own spins on it after treating, honestly, at this point, thousands of patients. I kind of found what I think dosing and different supplements work better. I treat a little bit longer in most cases. So I usually treat for like 3 or 4 weeks at least. But it's benign. It's like things like some probiotics, some fibers, some honey, and then like some oregano, some different mix of things. And 76% or cases gone in 2 weeks. That's so awesome.
And nothing like that just slams you. That's artificial, like all natural things. That's so awesome.
Yeah. So it's always worth trying if you aren't someone who has an ulcer, right? Like, why not spend 2 weeks trying to get rid of it, see what happens. And if it doesn't, you can always go to the antibiotic, in my opinion.
Totally.
So when you do take antibiotics, I'm assuming that you have or even maybe when you're just doing like antimicrobials, do you get people on probiotics? And if so, what is like a brand that you respect? Because there's so many out there. Like there's some that you could just take like, you know, the gummy version. And obviously that's not doing shit, but.
The gummies are so funny to me when people, like, first of all, I don't know if I've had the gummy probiotics, but I've tried, like, I went to a conference and they gave me the Smarty Pants or whatever, like multivitamin. I was like, delicious. It was like a fruit stack every day. So I was like, loving it, but it's like excessive sugar you don't need for, I'd rather have my sugar through another form, I think, if I'm going to go that route. But interestingly enough, I can get some hate for this one. I'm not huge into probiotics. So I think
controversy.
People, right? Like everyone's like, I took a probiotic. I have a lot of different feelings on probiotics. They're very helpful for a lot of people in certain situations. There's definitely brands I use more, and I can tell you which ones, or I find more benign, but people think like, I'm going to take a probiotic, it's going to fix everything. I could be biased because SIBO is something that I specialize in and see all the time. And I am actually a firm believer that it's adding fuel to the fire when you have SIBO to take a probiotic. Not for everyone. Basically, right, the right answer is try it. Did it make you feel worse? It's not right for you right now. Did it make you feel better? Trust your body over me and anything else. So there's kind of like multiple categories of probiotics. And I don't use probiotics. I just don't. not something I jump to right away by any means. I'm bigger on like, you have to remove the issue before you can replace the issue.
Yes.
There are spore-based probiotics, right? Which actually, they're like hit or miss for a lot of people, but like a brand for that that I use a lot is Megasporebiotic. That's a really good one. Most people do well with it. Like if you have SIBO, it's usually a non-issue. That's a really good brand as a whole. They have a lot of good products, but that is a spore-based probiotic. There's also like, I don't even know if it still exists, but people used to take Prescriptassist a lot. That's another one. I do find in most people's, like when I test stool all the time, their bacillus is super high. That is what a spore-based probiotic is. So you have to also take that with a grain of salt of like, are we just overdoing bacillus? Because too much of anything is not a good thing. Then there's yeast probiotics, I'll quote that. So that's like Saccharomyces boulardii. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. Love Saccharomyces boulardii. That is not, for anyone, I guess, new to this, bacteria is what we're talking about when we're talking about probiotics, really. But
yeah,
Saccharomyces boulardii is yeast fighting yeast. And it can be really helpful for candida infections, SIBO, parasites. There's actually like research on that specific probiotic twice a day for 3 months being more effective than medication for a parasite called Blastocystis hominis. So it's like, if I could give you a probiotic twice a day for 3 months and clear your parasite, I can do a lot less damage potentially, right, than crushing your intestines with medication or even herbs, which can do that too. And then there's like the concept of just bacteria, and then you have like pre and probiotics. So prebiotics are food for the probiotic, right? That is where I think people go wrong. They never take the prebiotic, and people don't eat enough prebiotics in their diet. So if you just take a probiotic and think it's going to stay and like battle the good, you know, bad guys, it's not. You're going to poop it out.
Yeah.
The bad guys are going to kill it off. It's not going to do its job. So it's like people make the mistake, in my opinion, of not either increasing their prebiotic foods or taking a probiotic that also has a prebiotic in it. So like one that has both is something like Ultra Flora Synergy by Metagenics. Has both. It's a powder. It's easy. And I also think people are like, I took the 100 billion probiotic that has 27 strains in it. And like, to me, that's not good.
Yeah.
Usually, right? Like you, more strains is not always better. You want higher amounts of like a few strains at a time, and then to rotate probiotics based on what you need or what you feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So I like them, but like Megaspore is a good one. Saccharomyces boulardii, it doesn't matter. You can get like over the counter, the florist store, or you can get like Orthomolecular's brand a lot. But yeah, I mean, over the counter, you can get a lot of decent ones. Just make sure it's like in the fridge.
Saccharomyces boulardii, is that what's in a lot of yogurt?
It's not usually in the store. That's usually like lactobacillus. Yeah, there's a bunch of different strains, but
yeah.
That, or people who think that the probiotic in yogurt is enough, is usually not the case either.
Yeah, no, totally.
You can make your own if you're into yogurt.
I mean, and it's obviously, it's not like a bad thing necessarily, but like you said, like no one is eating prebiotic foods, you know, which are typically, you know, like veggies and things like that, that are actually going to feed the bacteria. So that's such a good point. Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's just, it's honestly kind of a waste of money to buy all these probiotics and then not feed them.
Yeah.
So if someone is getting like regularly bloated after eating, is that, what is that usually an indication? Like what should be their first step with figuring out what the hell is going on?
That's a loaded one. So that's, I've written like a whole book on this. You want to, what's the usual suspect? Everything.
Test.
I'm a big believer in testing and guessing. Obviously it's not always useful. And there's a lot I mean, I practiced for years before I did testing. Like in New York, you cannot use, or now it's changed a little bit, but you can't use testing. And that's where I originally started. So I had to do a lot and learn to ask the right questions, which I think has helped me a lot now. But I think that if you are someone who's like, I'm bloating all the time and I don't know what to do, and I feel like I've tried everything, whatever. One, obviously the easiest and kind of like inexpensive way you can try something is food, right? And a true elimination diet. And if anybody needs help on that, we do have like a DIY protocol on our website. It's like $50 and it walks you through the whole month of doing that and has like 80 recipes. But the problem with that is like people, right, try like, I went gluten-free for like 2 weeks. It didn't make a difference. Well, and then they just start eating it again. And that is not how you uncover a food sensitivity. And so it's like, you didn't really actually go as far as you need into that realm. But like food is a really easy way not easy, super hard, but easy way, an affordable way to figure out if food is contributing to your bloating for most people. The biggest thing I would tell someone is probably actually to look at timing of bloating, because people just associate like bloating, or they say like, I ate, like go back to the food thing, but like at breakfast, I ate this and I got bloated 7 hours later. Well, it still could actually be from breakfast, or it could actually be from like 2 days before. Like, you know, food is hard. It can take 72 hours to mount a response from a food. So that's why it's really preferable to work with someone. But if it's right after you eat, like 15, 30 minutes after eating, I usually think about like your stomach acid or something going on in the stomach, because the food for 95% of people is still going to be in your stomach. So it's like, is there H. pylori, right? Is there low stomach acid? You want to rule those things out. Or how is your chewing? Are you just like, for me, I like inhale food. So it's like, maybe if I slow down, I wouldn't be getting bloated. So those are things to think about. And if it's like an hour or 2 or 3 hours later, you want to think about your small intestine. So, right, that's more where you think about fungal and bacterial overgrowth in the small, or some parasites in the small intestine. And is that feeding the food that you consumed and causing bloating every time you eat? Then you need to see a practitioner. Don't try to do that on your own. And then if it's like 12 hours later, you know, 5, 6 to 12 hours on, you think about your colon, and that's where stool testing can be super helpful. Like, is there something in there, or a food sensitivity again, that's causing the bloat? But there's like 5 main categories I think of with bloating. There's of course other reasons, but hormones, right? Especially thyroid health, but like hormones, stress, digestive output, meaning stomach acid and enzymes, bile, the infections we keep kind of coming back to, the gut infections, and then food. So like, those are the 5 categories to think about. And if you haven't, a lot of those are really hard to do on your own, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think people make the mistake of trying to do it on their own, and they make things worse.
Yeah. Just swirling symptoms.
I know, which is why I made the Instagram and the books and stuff. It was like, if you're gonna do this on your own, at least try to do most of it right. Like, you get the best guidance you can.
Yeah, your ebooks are great, like just great resources for people. So we'll link all that for sure so people can check it out. So you just mentioned hormones, and I think a lot of people don't realize there's a huge connection between the gut and hormones. So why don't you just talk a little bit about what you know about that?
Oh, God.
So your response to everything. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's loaded, right? They're, like, I wish we had like 12 hours to
talk about. I know.
We might have to have you on again, honestly.
Yeah, if you're struggling and if you have like a hormonal, especially thyroid, like, go get my thyroid and IBS book, and like, there's a bundle because they go hand in hand. But with, well, first of all, with hormones, kind of like, Megan, when we were talking about earlier, when you were like, okay, when I was stressed and eating poorly and my chin was having hacking or whatever, but you didn't say I fixed my hormones, you fixed your gut, and that corrected your hormones. Well, there's a whole component of sort of, I guess we can call it like detoxification in the gut of hormones, especially things like estrogens, that it's actually the starting place for hormonal health versus messing with the hormones. It's like, how are we making sure we're getting it out? And like, the root cause issue there outside of food is bad bacteria will increase these enzymes that basically recirculate the bad hormones into your body, so you don't get rid of them like you think you should be naturally. So checking your gut is always a good starting place for hormones. I obviously, in my practice, use a lot of like Dutch testing and thyroid testing.
Yeah.
Happy to talk about those too.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit. I just did a Dutch test 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
so
did?
My third
you
time.
Yet?
No, yeah. I'm pumped.
It's such a cool test.
I love it.
I gotta tell you, the Dutch test, well, like all these, this is just all my like blatant pet peeves of the Instagram world, but like, so many people like, which is great, Dutch like allows you to order the test through them.
Yeah.
I don't know many practitioners that can read those tests, let alone the people who are like ordering them and then trying to like seek out information to like piece it. It's like, work with a practitioner, guys.
It's just tough to find a good practitioner. It's hard.
It must be because it's like, that's a whole other issue. It is a whole other issue.
It's the same with what we do too. So it's not just because from the orthopedic standpoint and looking at injuries, it's hard to find a great, like somebody great if you've been in pain for a really long time. So it's the same kind of thing. So
yeah.
I can kind of like relate. But yeah, talk a little about the Dutch test. And it's really complex. It gives you so much info, but yeah.
It's really complicated. So it's easy though. It's a urine test, 24-hour urine test. A lot of the cool part about this is like, especially right now with the pandemic, most of what I do, you can do in the comfort of your own home. Like, I can ship you the kits, get the results. You don't have to go anywhere. Thyroid testing, a little different. You do have to be able to take it. But It's a urine test, and you just kind of like collect your urine over a 24-hour period, and it's going to tell you everything. The major difference between you going to like your PCP and getting your blood taken and Dutch test is it's going to show me, A, your 24-hour cortisol response, which is really, really helpful. But it's also going to tell me, let's take estrogen, for example, right? You go to a doctor, they test like your estrogen, your estradiol, and they're like, it's fine, it's in this range. Well, the Dutch test is actually going to test all types of estrogen, how the estrogen is moving through the body, and how well your body's actually clearing it. So it's in like methylating it and detoxifying it. So it's really cool. It's really informative, but it tests all your sex hormones. It can give some insight to thyroid, but it's not a thyroid test. But it also has like a bit of an organic acids component, like where it tests like your glutathione, your melatonin, your B6, your B12, dopamine, epinephrine. So it's very informative. It's very cool. And I've seen a lot of women get help from that, especially the easier women are to deal with are like the premenopausal and the postmenopausal. Perimenopause is rough. It's hard to even get capture the test sometimes, but it's so helpful. And it can also tell you like, maybe this isn't the problem in the gut. We should be looking at the gut, right? Because those two are very married in their help of each other. But that can be really helpful for pretty much everything we're talking about, from like the skin issues to for people. But if your hormones are out of whack, like you'll like take endometriosis, for example, right? People get bloated all the time with endometriosis and have gut health problems. They probably do from like scar tissue adhesions. It could also just be a hormonal component that's causing the bloating all the time. So like if you are a female that is cycling, pay attention to, is the bloating happening at the same point in your cycle all the time, right? That might make me think about hormonal component before I jump to like making you do a stool test, if you will. So that can be really helpful.
It's really interesting. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Let's just talk a little bit about leaky gut, because there's hundreds of published articles on leaky gut on PubMed, and yet there are still practitioners that are like, no, it's not a thing. So talk a little bit about what you know about leaky gut.
I could be wrong when I say this, but something I remember all the time. So I have my colleague and friend, Todd Lapine. He works for Merck Hyman. He's amazing. If you don't follow him, I love him. But he taught a course once, like in DC. So I went because I was like, why not? But he was talking about how the first death from a marathon was actually due to leaky gut. And I found it so fascinating. So I looked up. So it was due to like metabolic endotoxemia, which is essentially, right, things coming through the gut lining and causing toxicity and sepsis in the body. So there's like research all the way back to that. And I was like, that is fascinating. So I always remember that with leaky gut. But so if you find the article and I'm wrong, you can let me know. But leaky gut, I guess probably calling it leaky gut is not great, because people are just like, that doesn't sound like a medical term. Well, it's not. Intestinal permeability is the medical term. And it's been around a long time. There's tons of research. I think there's still a lot more research that probably needs to be done. For example, the test I use, one of the tests I use to test leaky gut, I don't push it on people ever. It's called zonulin through stool. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but it looks for whether or not an enzyme is opening up the tight junctions in the gut lining, which is right what leaky gut is. It's like a microscopic basketball net in your gut. That can be influenced day to day. I do think there are misconceptions of leaky gut. Like people test like, oh my God, I have it. And it's all the time. Well, it's like, no, if you took Tylenol because you had a headache, you have leaky gut. It's probably going to heal in 2 days. You eat wheat every day for a week, you're going to have leaky gut. It doesn't mean it's permanent. You know, it's kind of one of those ever-changing things. So I do think a lot of like functional medicine patients have it wrong too. It's very fixated. And I do think, not to harp on, like, I do think there's a lot of practitioners that are really good at selling themselves. So for how long did you guys see leaky gut everything, right? Like this person came out with leaky gut formula. This person came out, but no one's talking about what the heck is causing it and how you have to fix the cause or the leaky gut's not going away. Right. Yeah. So it is frustrating to deal with traditional healthcare in so many ways that aren't at least open to reading the research. And they're just, it's sort of a mixture of like ignorance is bliss and like you don't know what you don't know. But the research is there, right? If you look it up, intestinal permeability, the factors of zonulin, you can find it all. So it is very real. I do think it's overplayed a little bit though in our world.
Good.
Yes, that's my
very helpful, good information.
Yeah. So
if it can change like on a daily basis, like, I don't know, I guess like what's your best advice for people just in general that are maybe not necessarily like already having issues, but just like an awareness thing, like things to avoid or things that can exacerbate it or things to pay attention to that are signs.
Well, remember too, like your gut microbiome changes every day, right? Mm-hmm. People forget that. They think that like it never changes. It's every single day. You can change your diet and completely change your microbiome in like 24 hours. So that's other stuff you can research that comes up, but it can change. So like things like unnecessary medications or Tylenol, like avoid it if you don't need it, right? Like work with you guys, figure out where's the pain coming from, all that. Because if we just keep taking medication, you're just going to keep messing your gut up and you're just going to keep being more inflammation and having more pain. So that's like a big one, is like avoiding unnecessary supplements. People are on like 50 things and so scared to get off of them, but like your body has to process everything you're putting into it, right? And not all supplements, they're not FDA regulated. We don't know what's in all of them. So that's one. And then finding out your food triggers is huge, because if it's dairy, if it's soy, whatever, if you don't minimize or remove that food, it doesn't need to be 100% of the time for everyone, but you're going to keep having issues. So like, I love when my patients will do the elimination diet, figure out their sensitivities, even if it's not that bad. Let's say they have wheat and they're like, I feel a little like arthritic or something like that. It doesn't necessarily mean it's like you can never have it again, but like pick and choose wisely and at least know what's triggering the pain for you, because there is research that wheat will cause leaky gut in everyone, right? It's dose dependent, meaning you could have a piece of bread every day and probably be okay. And I could have like a spoonful of oatmeal and like have a horrible reaction. It's like, so it sort of depends, but like, and SIBO cause leaky gut. And those are the top two causes, wheat and SIBO. So it's like, if you don't get rid of your SIBO, it's a problem, but all you can really do is like have variety in your diet, reduce your stress, avoid medications, exercise, but don't overexercise, because that will cause permeability in the gut too. So if you're someone, I say that all the time, like people who overexercise every single day, it's a problem. Marathoners, it's always a problem. They always have the worst guts.
How does sleep affect your gut?
Blast firing you with lots of questions.
Sorry, I'm just getting questions on your questions. Like, this is awesome.
Sleep is going to affect everything in your entire body. And it's like the hardest thing to fix, but the most important thing to fix, in my opinion. So if you don't, you can think of it this way, easy way to understand this would be like, if you don't sleep, you're going to have a lowered immune system over time, right? Like you're going to end up getting low cortisol chronically. You're going to get a low immune system. If your immune system can't keep up, what's going to protect you from all the pathogens in your gut overgrowing, right? If you don't sleep, research has shown, right, we crave more caffeine, we crave more sugar, we crave more carbohydrates. So it's like immediately our day kind of goes to crap, which then sets a cascade and kind of like a rhythm for the rest of the week. But if you do that, what all the bad stuff in your gut feeds on sugar, right, and caffeine. So it's like you do that, you're just promoting the growth of yeast and bad bacteria and parasites and all of that. So there's like, and there's probably like 100 other ways I could list, but it's really, really, even just like the diurnal pattern of your sleep and your rhythms is going to affect like your vagus nerve and how things are moving and motility, right? Like,
yeah,
it's.
Well, and like, doesn't your liver do a lot of work at nighttime? And if you're not
sleeping, it's its most active time. Yeah. And you'll see a lot of people are stressed or not sleeping. Like they either struggle with constipation, right, in the morning, or they're like immediate, I have to go to the bathroom, like when they wake up. Mm-hmm. So it is really important to like, kind of, you could talk about the bloating thing, like start paying attention to your bloating and how well you're sleeping at night.
Yeah,
it's totally. It's tough for people that chronically don't sleep, because as a fix, it's very, very difficult. So it's like you can do all these amazing other things in your life. You could eat well, you could exercise, you could do all these things, but telling somebody to fix their sleep, it's a little more complicated.
And the Dutch test is really helpful for that, for finding like at least supplemental things that can be useful. But I struggled with sleep for like 15 years on and on, like, and it was always different things and I've tried everything. So I do feel like equipped to help people with it, because I've tried everything.
Get that.
But it's hard to fix.
And something I will say, coming from somebody who doesn't, I'm a terrible sleeper. People don't really realize how much our vision actually can play in a role. And this is kind of just something I've learned about myself. I got my vision was really overcorrected. I was a like full diopter over. And the week I got it corrected, I started to sleep. And since then my sleep pattern has changed. So for your clients and stuff,
have them get it. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it's very common to see, we're kind of like, I mean, we see that all the time, and maybe it manifests as pain. Maybe it manifests differently for different people, but I'm really starting to see that people are really overcorrected. And so
I love learning things like that. Yeah.
Get your eyes checked. I mean, it was a huge change. There's some of the stuff I've been studying lately and how much it's helped me with my own sleep. It's just, it's wild. Cause that's always, you know, when you're not a good sleeper, you're always trying to figure out how to sleep better. That's it.
And there's so many issues that play into sleep. Like it's right from just your diet and blood sugar balance to like your exercise, to your stress, to
your hormones,
stress, your gut health.
To the anxiety that comes with not being a good sleeper for a long time.
That's usually the driver. You're just like laying there, you're like, and it switches up, right? And like your cortisol levels and sleep's tough.
We haven't had somebody on yet to talk specifically about sleep, more because I think I can't handle it.
I know. It is stressful. And then, right, people are just like, oh, you need to get some sleep. You're like,
it's like, shut up.
Their name. You're like, you're like,
I don't want to hear what you have to think about me trying to get sleep. I get it.
I know. You're like, I've tried everything under the book, but I do think a lot of it stems from the perception of the stress and anxiety around, right? And
then, totally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
totally. This was so awesome. So we ask our guests, every guest gets asked this question. Mm. What do you do? It doesn't have to be every day, but maybe every day, maybe twice a week. I don't know. What do you do to move your brain and move your body?
Oh my gosh. Tell me what I should be doing. No. what do I do? To move my brain and move my body. Right now, I'm really into crossword puzzles for my brain health, which I actually think is very helpful. So weirdly, I think crossword puzzles are we have the New York Times book. It's like this big. Really takes you down a notch when you're feeling good about yourself. I'll just tell you that. And let's see what else. I'm trying to read more for my brain. I don't do enough of that, I think. So diverse things. I haven't thought through this question. There's probably other things.
That's really great. Nobody's
ever sleep. Answered. I'm really, really actually very much since the pandemic working on my sleep, because that has been a big game changer for me. Like not having to have as much caffeine and being able to sleep has been huge. And move my body, walking my dog. So we try to do family walks because we're both working from home. So we try to do at least two a day and really consistently, which has been really good. And you know, something I think is really important that has been sucky because of the pandemic, but I've been now getting back into it. I think body work is huge. I think
I'm getting a massage today.
I just got one last week for so many reasons, from sleep distress to if you need visceral manipulation, you know what I mean, to pain. So I've been trying to get back into actually doing that for me because I'm someone who's had pain on and off since I was like a teen. So I find that super helpful. So I'd say maybe that. I'm also really into yoga for people. Trying to get back into that. Body work.
All right. Well, I'm going to post all your information in our show notes. And we have an Instagram. We're going to share that information on there too. But where can people find you if they want to reach out? And what's your Instagram and your website?
My website. So it's all pretty consistent. It is gut, like your gut, G-U-T, honest truth, play on words, .com. And then my Instagram's the same. It's the handle's at gut honest truth. I'm on Facebook for the older crowd, but that is actually not at gut honest truth. That's Katie Mora, functional wellness. But yeah, you can find a lot directly off of both my Instagram and my Facebook, I would say. Or if you're interested in more, I'll have to have you guys on my podcast. I would love to talk about, I love talking about pain because I'm someone who's struggled with it my whole life. So
yeah,
I'll have you guys on if you're interested to talk about your approach to root cause.
Yeah, it is something else. And it's interesting to find root causes in this realm. It's different than yours. But I think together, it's like, what a amazing pair.
Yeah, I think that my two top referrals in all of what I do, like consistently, is some form of mental health, usually a psychologist, but mental health therapy and body work or movement or PT or something. It's like the two biggest game changers I find for people, chiropractic, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it should all be integrated. So we need more
relationships. That's like the trifecta of people. Yes.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested to hear what you guys have to offer and how to offer my listeners one day.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this was fun.
This was so fun. Thank you so much for coming on our show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.